This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Decompressing right now, you know, for the next month or two. When you're elected official, it took a lot away from family, and now it's time to kind of refocus on the family life since there was an imbalance, especially for myself. And so that's what I've been focusing on recently.
How roller coaster was election night? I mean, you probably had some people. Your brother Josh is an incredibly astute person when it comes to votes and voting, and I'm sure he looked at some numbers early, and I know there was some jubilation and celebration, but as the night wore on, those West Side precincts started to come in, traditionally a little more Republican, even though it's a nonpartisan thing. How much of a roller coaster was that night for you?
It really wasn't for me, because I looked, we have people that went to the polls, and you can, when you go, you can get the results almost immediately. They do it right there. And so we did have some around, I think it's Christ the King area, some in Blessed Sacrament. They come out heavy out west. And then I knew, I go, oh boy, you know, this doesn't look good.
Okay.
And then I knew we needed the early vote to have a 2,000 vote lead.
Okay.
I always felt that way. And when it came in, we were at 1,300 votes. And I knew I just felt it wasn't going to be good unless the East Side turned out. And the East Side numbers, the proportionate numbers came in like we wanted. We were winning like 80 to 20. Well, out west, it was coming in, we're 200 votes down each precinct, it seemed like. So really, even though the margin was heavy to our favor on the East Side or inner city, it didn't prevail. They didn't turn out as high as what previous elections had showed.
What do you think that's about, Mayor? The East Side traditionally will vote and give somebody a really good percentage. And that goes back in partisan elections, whatever the case might be. But the numbers just aren't there. I know that probably that concerned you during your administration as much as anything to unite this city and bring it. Boy, if there's a lot of people living on the East Side, especially, that just don't get involved or vote. They're just, I think they lack any hope or any reason to be hopeful, I guess.
Well, I think with any election, the more people you run, the better. I mean, that's how we felt. We actually had three candidates we got to run in Ward 1. We were looking at Ward 10 and Ward 6, and they were talked out of running. I think that was detrimental to us. And the what they said, the argument was, well, you're going to turn out the vote on the West Side or wherever. But what you want is a discussion with candidates where they just can't go full bore attack on the direction they'd like to take. And that's what happened when you had a lot of unchallenged seats in the city council. You didn't have that fruitful discussion that was needed to really engage the community and have that greater support and greater outcome with regards to people turning out to vote.
Is 700 plus votes the closest any mayoral race has been in the history of Springfield? I know what the percentages are,
right,
but 700 plus raw votes, that's not a lot of votes.
Right, that was the closest in the new form of government. I didn't go back to previous, but yeah, that was close. You know, someone told me, oh, you won 7 out of the 10 wards. Well, that doesn't matter unless you have the plurality. And so that was the closest race. And when we took back, you know, any loss is disappointing. But when you look at it, what we were up against, I told my supporters, we're lucky we didn't get blown out of the water. You know, you had over $500,000 spent. I think it was over $600,000 spent against us, which is kind of absurd. And it's a new level of campaigning in Springfield. You know, a lot of vocal oppositions with regards to unions. We had AFSCME that was in our corner. But individuals that we thought were for us ended up not really being there. And, you know, the Democrat Party, the rank and file were for us. The executive group or the higher echelon was not. And so when you have that money, forces going against you, three things really, in my estimation, outside the money and everything else, our strategy was spot on. What we wanted or needed was the Democrat support, which was there, the rank and file. But there's a flyer went out, didn't have my picture on it, had everybody else's on there. I think that was not only detrimental to myself, but detrimental to the down ballot candidates. And then also with regards to the suppression of the vote is what I call it. I think there's suppression of vote happening, whether people weren't running for office, they were talked out of running, or just, you know, people not turning out the ballot box. I think those items proved detrimental to us, where we thought if we had one of those items come to fruition, we would have won, but all three went against us.
Union support. You had some union support, but you had some others, very, very instrumental, did not support. They didn't 4 years ago when you ran against Frank Edwards. You were able to overcome that. I think the first time you ran back in, 15, you had a lot of union support. What happened? Did something transpire along the way?
Well, I think, quite frankly, there's one vocal opposition that really resonates with unions and was able to that resonated through time with regards to that. And I think with unions, I'm for the unions. Yeah, you can look it up. We've supported PLAs. 98% of city contracts were union contracts, things of that nature. So that doesn't hold water. But I think what happens is you're looking with unions. You want. You're there to support your membership. And so that's what they try to do, get 100%. 98% is not good enough. They want 100%. And, I've always been viewed as really looking at how we can make our community better. That's why it's important to do the housing redevelopment. Previously, unions didn't really have an interest in single-family housing. Now, all of a sudden, they do. But really, if you want to change the trajectory of Springfield, especially the inner core, you have to start training the workforce, and that's what we were pushing. We were pushing an initiative with Bone Training, Galvin Pitts, and hopefully partnering him with other entities like HAM, William Bishop III, and also there's another individual that name escapes me right now that does carpentry, but have them work together to do housing redevelopment. But then you teach people a craft that are underemployed. So it's individuals within the neighborhood, specifically on the east side of Springfield, that need, they're either underemployed or need employment, that aren't going to go to Lincoln Land or, they're past the high school age. These are people that are falling through the cracks and giving them the opportunity to redevelop the east side, because all the materials you have is right there. And right now is the time to redevelop housing because of the cost of materials. You lack workforce, as we all know, across the board. And this was an initiative that really could lift that up and really help Springfield. And I think that's what really got in the ire, I guess, of some of the unions. But how I always did, it's going to diversify the unions, and you're going to have a pre-apprentice program that you can set up to, help with the union positions or the ones that they would need, but focus on rebuilding the east side or the inner city, the city of Springfield.
Former Mayor Mike Houston yesterday on with us. Comment he never thought negative campaigns worked in local elections. Mm-hmm. He said it was a negative campaign, Sam, and I think it worked. Did the tenor of the campaign surprise you as it progressed?
Well, there's a flat out lie with regards to the pay to play thing. If that's what he's referring to.
I think he's talking about the attorney thing.
Yeah, that was it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a check that came in, $2,500, so the other side can raise hundreds of thousands of dollars, special interest money. And I'm not going to name names. I think everybody knows the individuals because it is Springfield, but $2,500. So, they brought that up and, I just gave the check back when it was raised. And then come to find out, they said, well, he got forgiven debt. Well, who's in charge of the debt are two individuals, Corporation Council and the Treasurer's Office. Those are the ones that handle the debt. The mayor's office, I don't dive into that. It's administrative court process. So it was, it's a fabrication is what it ended up being. But did it hurt? I'll let that up for the pundits with regards to that. I don't think it got many legs. Otherwise, they would have used it in commercials. They didn't really use it. I think they had a news conference and went that direction. But it wasn't newsworthy, and I think people understand that, our words are bond as far as the Langfelders go, and that's what we're here. I've heard many times that nobody else has loved the city as much as I have as mayor, and I think people resonated more towards that messaging. But I think in the end, again, going back to the items that hurt, leaving me off the flyer, the suppression of the vote, and those were the items that really hurt, and with regards to talking people out of running. Those were the three items that really hurt. And if we would have had one of those, if you had a Dan Pittman running in Ward 6, mm-hmm. if you had Steven Simpson Black running in Ward 1, then we had somebody else that was going to run in Ward 10. One of those people run, Ralph Hanauer, Alderman Hanauer, Alderman Redpath cannot bash the city. They have to support the initiatives that we're doing. Instead, they had free ranges to, just unload. And when you have that many council members unloading, the blessing I had is at least I had supporters where, going back to the day when my father was running, it was like all-out war, you know, against the mayor. And so, you know, it's not sour grapes. It's just the reality of it. And I had a good mentor with my father, and, you know, people were shocked that, you know, I could come out and just, you know, give a gracious speech at the end and support the new administration and move forward. But that's how we're supposed to do. You know, you're supposed to support the city, and that's what everybody should keep their really their focus on, is how can we move this city forward in a positive direction and really hopefully maintain or reach the trajectory that we were going.
Mayor Jim Langfelder is with us. Is there an issue you wish you would have hit harder and emphasized more in the campaign? Was there something you said, gee, I think if we'd have hit this issue harder, we'd have been probably successful, as close as the vote was?
Yeah, that's a good question. One was, of course, what you brought up with regards to the negative campaigning, hit it head on more than what we did.
Okay.
And then that was one. The other one is, I think, telling our story. I think a lot of people didn't realize how much work has been done. What I would have done is probably, and this is a gamble, I could have forced the Windham vote. I could have said, you know, we were all set to vote on that pre-election.
Right.
So I could have forced that vote. But if that unravels, you get one shot at those projects, and you didn't want that blowing up. The other one, Shields Sports Complex, that should have been handled months before the election, but wasn't. And so those are projects, same with the firehouses. You know, you could have pushed all those initiatives. Instead, they come a month after the election. And, you know, you scratch your head and go, well, this seems a little suspect with regards to the timing of everything. And that's probably what I would have done, is maybe push those initiatives earlier. But when you do, especially for the private sector, you do risk losing those projects. And it's more important that the project prevails than I prevail. I'd rather have the project move forward, move Springfield to a positive manner, even if it meant risking my own reelection. That's what ended up happening.
Go back, final question, this segment, the suppression of votes. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me there were people out there that making sure that some wards had no competition?
Yes.
An individual or group of individuals who were making sure that happened?
Well, I'm not going to say individuals, because they'll say, oh, no, that's not the case. But when you...
No, not names, yeah, but you think it was individual people or
well, I think it's a combination group. Probably.
Okay.
I think you know, political people look at things politically.
Yes.
I always felt a larger turnout helped the... I think with us, what happens is people have to be motivated to vote. Well, the ones that are motivated to vote are the ones that can get something out of an election. Well, if you're happy with the way things are going, you're not really necessarily motivated to vote. You know, things are going well. You know, you may go out and vote. Hopefully you do. But the ones that are challenging the, you know, current administration, they're motivated to vote. And I think that was the other part of the equation. So I always felt the larger the turnout, the more people to run. I think it always is helpful, especially with how we handled the times, the very challenging times we were in.
Again, final question this segment. I apologize.
Cause that's
just,
right.
But, and I know I've got Kurt Considine waiting from Express, and Kurt, bear with me. How disappointed are you that only 34% of the people show up to vote in a city election when you think about the amount of advertising dollars, some of them benefited right in this building, advertising dollars, direct mail, billboards, whatever, and only 34%. What's the deal with the other 66%? Mayor, do they just not care?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because it has dropped off through time.
Yes.
So you hope people are better engaged instead of being disengaged. And I think some of it is disenfranchisement, I would think. But, you know, with regards to the time we're in, that's why you're asking what I will be doing. I will stay involved in, you know, the political process, if you will, because it is important, especially at the local level, especially at the city level. I always believe that the city level of government is the most important level of government, because we do impact people's lives. And so that's what we'll continue to do and stay involved in that regards. But whether why didn't they turn out, or, you know, it's typically a low turnout election because it's just driven by the cities. You know, I can't really answer that as far as what motivates a person to vote or not. I've always, you know, I was brought up to vote, and, you know, we try to ingrain that in our children. And so hopefully others see the value of it, especially the ones that felt that every day and since the election, people have come up to me either expressing shock or sorrow. You know, they wish I would have been in. And I hopefully they turn that around to energy to get people energized to vote in the next city election, or any election for that matter.
Okay, what's up with the Wyndham? We hear that you thought your administration had an agreement on $18.5 million. Evidently, the mayor told some sources that she would be a little more comfortable at around $11.5 million. Does this start the negotiations all over again?
Well, I'll leave that up to the current administration, the developer. What we've always contended is whatever the project generates in tax revenue would go back to the project for the cap would be the $18.75 million. And that's roughly a third of the project costs, the estimated project costs. So what happened, I think Ryan McCready, head of the Springfield Sangamon Growth Alliance, was in conversations with the Springfield Sangamon Regional Planning Commission and or the staff, rather, and they projected what the end value of the hotel would be all redone. And so that's where the discrepancy is. But in addition to the property tax revenue, it'd be a targeted TIF, so the property taxes generated would go back into the project, as well as hotel motel tax generation, and then possibly sales tax revenue from the Starbucks. So those are policy decisions that the administration will have to, you know, make a determination what they're comfortable with. We always felt that if it's generated from the project in itself, it's important. And we went through this whole discussion with the previous developer of Mr. Mitchell. And, you know, we went all the way up to 150 hotel rooms. And this was without even asking for incentives. The council voted it down. And that's where the concept of shuttling people. David Mitchell was the one that came up with that and shuttled people downtown. And now it seems like they're kind of moving that direction where it's okay. Well, before, this is the epicenter of tourism. You need the hotel rooms, and you need that blend of market-rate housing, and that's what they should push for and hopefully come to a resolution working together to get it done. But the important concept that's not being translated through is whatever the whatever's generated from that project of their own taxes goes into the project. If it doesn't reach that point of the $18.75 million, then it's on the developer.
We've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Why wasn't the vote taken earlier?
Well, that's, you know, certain council members didn't want voted on that project before the election. You know, it was all set with the Springfield Sangamon Growth Alliance. The developer wanted it voted on in March because now we're in the construction season. And he always expressed the pressure of getting things done sooner rather than later. And then, you know, they decided SSGA wanted to wait till after the election just to appease some of the council members. Now you're already a month away and still haven't taken the vote. So I think that's part of that. They got caught up in the election and everything else. And again, you know, I could have forced the vote maybe before the election, but then the whole thing could have fell apart. Who knows? But we partnered with the SSGA because that was city council members. You know, they like going that direction, getting that confidence. And hopefully they come to a, you know, a sensible solution. But again, that Wyndham project is essential for downtown. I believe having the hotel space along with the market rate housing, because that does support the retailers and restaurants 24/7, 365 days a year instead of just during the tourism side.
Can you stay around for a few minutes? Or are you busy?
Sure.
Huh?
Yeah.
I have two more. I want to talk about the library and talk about Corporation Council.
Okay.
Those two and how important those were and still are, as a matter of fact. Former Mayor Jim Langfelder visiting with us. It's been a very busy morning. The library certainly was a bone of contention. And again, I want to make sure that we all know on the same page that it is the right of a new administration, new mayor, to maim people who serve at the will of the previous administration and so on and so forth. You replaced a librarian. Is there a way it could be handled? Would you handle that dismissal different now that you've had a chance? Are you comfortable? And let's talk about Summer Griffith, your combination. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when I made the replacement, I just felt a new direction was needed, especially during the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic. Libraries' importance have really grown and showed their value or their need for their value, especially when children weren't at school. You know, that was one of the saving places you could go to. So that's why I really made the change. And I met with all the employees is how I handled it. And it was met with resistance of somewhat with the board. And I think a lot of those comments are coming forward now with regards to the structure. I believe in the structure. I believe the mayor should be the appointing authority, because you want someone that who has the best interests of the city of Springfield is one person. The mayor, without a doubt, is the voice for the city of Springfield, not taking anything away from anybody else. But they are bombarded with special interests and everybody's other's opinions, and they have to form their own opinion and direction they'd like to see things go. So the mayor is really the appointing authority, and I'm a firm believer in the way that's structured now. So I do differ from Summer Griffith's opinion on that. And the change I made when I was out in the campaign, one of the board members that really wasn't in favor of the change to Summer Griffith, she said, I really have to commend you, Mayor, because we didn't know what we were missing until Summer came on and did all the new programmings and went a different direction altogether. And that really shows you the trajectory of something. I think in Springfield, what holds us back is not embracing the change that needs to happen to really break through. And Summer was one of those change agents, if you will, that really lifted up the library to a new level that nobody really understood what we were missing until she came in and actually started doing the different programs that she had done. And this is, and she'll say she'd worked with the staff to make it happen, but you have to have that champion, and she was that champion. But again, you know, it's each mayor has their own, you know, they can do what they want as far as directors, because they have to carry out the vision of the mayor and the direction they would like to go.
How concerned were you that Summer Griffith did not have a degree in library science and could then possibly, we have heard, jeopardize the possibility of acquiring grants for the library? Did you check that out?
Oh, yeah, checked it out. One of the greatest people you could check it out with was Nancy Huntley, the previous director. And she said, it's not mandatory. You know, it's it'd be nice to have, but it's not a mandatory thing. And with Summer Griffith, she has a degree in communications, I think it is, and other degrees. And so she was just the right fit, you know, because the direction I wanted to take, again, this was my own personal direction, was more the outreach, doing the outreach and getting out there. And so how we structured it, we created, she was the director, and then we had two assistants. So one was Curtis Mann, who's now the acting one, I think, director, but he was kind of like the outward face assistant. And then we had Emily, her last name escapes me, sorry, but she was more the librarian. They both have librarian degrees, but you have to have someone that provides that direction. Summer Griffith was, without a doubt, the direction I wanted to take post-pandemic, to really lift up the library more of the outward face and get people engaged in the library and what it means and what it could mean, not only for individuals, but for the city as a whole.
Well, let's talk about the homeless situation. Did you ever think back on the decision not to utilize the facility on 11th Street for the homeless? A lot of people were involved. The hospital was involved and so on and so forth. Did you ever look back on that decision and think maybe we should have gone a different direction?
The Center for Health and Housing was the right structure, wrong location. I couldn't get off that location because there was a daycare across the street. It's still there. And so that was the wrong location. Tried to move it. Actually, I had proposals to build them a new facility on the other side of the tracks on a vacant property and other buildings. And the council didn't want to hear it, or individuals bringing the initiative forward. Which, originally the concept everybody's for, 99% of Springfield's for that concept, but the location wasn't right. So that's what it got hung up on. So it did pass the council, by the way, and Helping Hands smartly didn't pursue it, because it would have been a lawsuit, and people think it was a zoning lawsuit. It would have been a civil rights lawsuit, because nobody in Springfield would want a facility like that across from a daycare. I don't think there you could find a place. I know people say they do. I don't believe it. And I think there'd been a civil rights lawsuit. And so wisely, we moved past that. And, you know, with the partnership with the Continuum of Care, which the city's part of, the county's part of, the hospitals are part of, and moving the right direction with regards to the juvenile center. But really, the key is the day-to-day outreach. And that's what we do with our homeless outreach team, is the day-to-day outreach and partnership with hospitals and the providers to get people off the streets. You know, housing's just like a ladder. I've said this many times. The people on the street, they're not to that first rung yet. First rung is getting them into the shelter. Second rung would be into a Mercy's Communities or Sojourn Center, Fifth Street Renaissance. The next rung would be the Housing Authority, Habitat for Humanity, hopefully get to the point of their own sustainability. But there's some that will always need the help. So we need to get them off the street and put them in a better position and move forward in that direction with that outreach and that holistic approach to providing services.
Shields Sports Complex, you stood up at the Hall of Fame banquet and said, it's going to happen. That was in February. What made you so confident, and are you still confident we will see the start of construction for the Shields Sports Complex?
Well, hopefully something happens on the federal level, because it could be, if they don't raise the debt limit, I'm not sure what the consequences will be with the financial markets and everything else.
Okay.
That's really the intangible that forces things. So that's why I said it'd been better. And I've talked to the developers from day one. They got caught up in a PLA, and I said, we'll just put the need for a PLA in the contract, in the ordinance. You have to have a PLA to move forward. And that would have saved them months. And so you can't underestimate the time value of money. And that, you know, kind of delayed things further because I felt it should have been started months ago, you know, if not a year ago. And so unfortunately it didn't go that route. But now the new intangible is going to be the debt limit. If they don't raise the debt limit of the U.S. economy, who knows what's going to happen. But if everything stays like it is today, it will move forward in that direction as far as being built.
Corporation Council. I've asked you once, and this was a couple of years ago. I said, "Is Jim Zirkel running the city of Springfield?" You'd heard that. You'd heard that comment. You reacted to that and answered that. How important is that, and why, in your estimation, was Jim Zirkel so valuable to the city of Springfield?
Well, I've had people say, "Oh, we'll support you if you get rid of Jim Zirkel," and I always felt confident in his abilities, especially contracts. You know, we talked off air about contracts. Mm-hmm. The city got upside down in wind contracts, power marketing debacle. Just think where we'd be if we had that $200 million of people's money into our economy instead of going elsewhere outside of the city economy. And so you cannot underestimate the value of someone of his intelligence that really protects the city. He understands city code. He understands the need to protect the city and contracts. And that's really what can turn everything on its head. And so from that standpoint, he's very valuable to the city of Springfield. And without a doubt, has saved us millions of dollars through the years in protecting us. Like I pointed out, just two contracts under two different administrations that cost us tens of millions of dollars. So he is very valuable from that standpoint. And that historical knowledge you cannot replace.
How do you spend the rest of the day? Final question.
Well, I was going to go to 820 Church at Blessed Sacrament, but I don't think I'll make it.
I'll hear your confession. No problem.
That's right. Oh, but actually, you know, again, doing things around the house. I do have some meeting appointments set up because some people have reached out and wanted my insights on items. And so, you know, that's how I plan it. What's nice about it is I'm on time more often because I don't have as many pressured time elements coming my direction. So that's a good factor in taking it one day at a time for the time being. But again, I'll stay involved, but I will be able to pick and choose what I want to get involved with. But the one plug I should give, Motorheads, you mentioned Motorheads.
Yes.
Well, Ron Metzger, I said, well, after I'm mayor, and I thought it was going to be 4 years from now,
yeah.
I told him, I said, I'm going to help out your wife, Pat, because I think it was Lick Creek was playing. She sold 70 cases of beer in this little beer stand. I said, well, I'll help out. Well, I guess I'll be helping out this Friday because they'll be playing there and be doing that just for fun.
Well, didn't you help pour beer here recently? We're downtown this weekend.
Right, right.
Who was that for?
That was for the arts fair.
Okay.
The Old State Capitol Arts
Fair.
And
you or somebody said you were down there serving beer?
Yeah, beer truck. Yeah. So it's a good way to see people, and it's kind of interesting seeing people's reaction. You know, how, you know, they react to you, especially after the election.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.